From The Australian, here's what's on the front. I'm Kristen Amiot. It's Wednesday, April 24. Wicked and calculated. That's how lawyers for Network 10 described the defamation lawsuit brought against it by Bruce Lehrman. They say the former Liberal staffer should pay all of the network's legal costs because he snubbed an early offer to settle out of court. And the TV network argued its presenter, Lisa Wilkinson, should foot the bill for any duplicative or wasteful work done by her legal team during the lengthy proceedings. You can read the latest in the ongoing legal saga right now at theaustralian.com.au. Terrorists and criminals are using end-to-end encryption to stoke extremism and promote misinformation online. And two of Australia's most senior officials have had enough. In a joint speech at the National Press Club today, ASIO Director General Mike Burgess and Federal Police Commissioner Rhys Kershaw will say social media platforms have to do more to snuff out the problem. Almost four decades after two Indigenous teenagers were killed in a devastating car crash in northwest New South Wales, a coroner has found racial bias within police ranks irrevocably tarnished the investigation and likely let a killer walk free. That's today's episode. A note before we start. Aboriginal listeners are advised that this episode contains the names of people who've died, and it mentions some distressing concepts. February 1990, northwest New South Wales. This is proper outback country where the mercury rarely dips below 30 degrees Celsius, even in the middle of the night. A courtroom in Bourke is hot and stuffy. The air is thick with anticipation. A man, 40 years old at the time, stands accused of killing two Indigenous teenage girls 3 years earlier, in 1987. A jury of 12, all of them white, returns a verdict. Not guilty. On Tuesday, in that same courthouse where, decades earlier, justice was denied, State Coroner Teresa O'Sullivan handed down her findings from an investigation into the deaths of 16-year-old Mona Lisa Smith and her cousin, 15-year-old Jacinta Rose. We've used a voice actor to bring you her words.
Although it scarcely needs to be said, the conduct of Mr. Grant was predatory and disgraceful.
The coroner said the New South Wales Police investigation into the girls' deaths was severely lacking, thanks to the racial bias within its ranks. She said it was
clear beyond doubt that the initial police investigation suffered from what can only be termed very serious deficiencies.
Mona Lisa and Jacinta Rose Smith were cousins. They were also best friends, a deep connection born of close family ties and small-town life.
Inseparable since childhood, the girls were described as being like sisters.
Mona Lisa's mob are the Murawari and Kunja people. Jacinta Rose, or Cindy to those who loved her, was a Wongamara girl. On the evening of December 5, 1987, they were making their way to the reserve just outside town where they lived with their families.
It is clear that the families living on the reserve were close-knit and that the girls were part of an extended, loving community.
O'Sullivan said they were responsible despite their young ages and that they didn't usually accept lifts from strangers. But Alexander Ian Grant wasn't a stranger, not really. Mona and Cindy had encountered him once before, a few weeks earlier. On that occasion, Grant had allowed another of the girls' cousins, Sharon Smith, to drive his ute. The coroner said Grant was predatory and sexually inappropriate towards the young girls, propositioning them for sex and plying them with alcohol. Still, when Grant offered them a lift to the reserve on that hot December night, they accepted.
Instead of giving them a lift home as he should have, Mr. Grant took off with them, attending the Riverview Hotel on the Mitchell Highway at around 10 p.m. to purchase alcohol.
It was on the Mitchell Highway a bit over 30 k's outside of the tiny town of Angonia that Grant's Toyota Hilux spun out of control. It swerved to and fro across the bitumen before rolling and landing right side up a short distance from the road.
Based on the brief of evidence, intoxication, fatigue, road speed and lighting are highly likely contributing factors to the loss of control.
Mona and Cindy were thrown from the vehicle, sustaining injuries that would end their young lives. In the early hours of the next day, Sunday, December 6, 1987, farm workers came upon the devastating scene. Grant was alive and highly intoxicated. He lay on a tarpaulin next to Cindy, his arm slung across her exposed chest. It appeared her clothing had been interfered with. Police arrived shortly before 6 a.m. Grant told them through slurred speech that he'd been driving the ute when it crashed and that the two girls weren't dead, only sleeping. It was only when Constable Kenneth McKenzie confirmed the girls were dead that his story changed. He said Mona had been driving and that it was Cindy who initiated the encounter.
He claimed in court that Cindy had propositioned him.
Rosemary Neal is a senior writer with The Australian. We spoke with her back in mid-2022 when it was announced the inquest would be reopened.
The magistrate was very sceptical of that testimony. He had also admitted that he had lied to police. It was impossible for Cindy to have manoeuvred herself out of the crashed vehicle, and the tarpaulin had been neatly laid out, something a critically ill passenger could not have done.
The police investigation that followed the crash has been the subject of intense scrutiny for decades. State Coroner Teresa O'Connor found the investigation was riddled with errors and that Mona and Cindy's families were repeatedly failed as they grieved the girls' deaths. O'Connor said tensions between the New South Wales Police Force and the local Indigenous community was to blame for the flawed investigation.
I accept the submissions on behalf of the Smith families as to the existence of racial bias within the New South Wales Police Force at the relevant time, and that it did in fact impact upon the investigation into the deaths of Mona and Cindy. The uncomfortable truth, to my mind, is that had two white teenage girls died in the same circumstances, I cannot conceive of there being such a manifestly deficient police investigation into the circumstances of their deaths.
The coroner said police were quick to accept Grant's changing version of events and failed to perform even the most basic investigative functions.
The failures in the hours, days, and weeks following the accident to investigate the matter thoroughly and to secure critical exhibits, such as Mr. Grant's vehicle, had an irreparable impact on the investigation and the evidence available for use in any criminal prosecution.
When Alexander Ian Grant eventually faced court for his role in the deaths of Mona and Cindy Smith, he did so on lesser charges than he probably should have.
He faced two charges of dangerous driving occasioning the girls' deaths and sexually interfering with Cindy's corpse. The charge of interfering with Cindy's corpse, which was obviously the most emotional charge, had been withdrawn days before the trial without the family even being told because of a technicality. And that technicality was that the medical experts could not pinpoint the exact moment of Cindy's death.
Grant died in 2017, having never served prison time for Mona and Cindy's deaths. Coming up, the families who finally got justice. While I've got you, don't forget our subscribers get breaking news alerts direct to their phones, newsletters, special events, and the most lively and detailed news, analysis, and commentary around the clock. Check us out at theaustralian.com.au. We'll be back after this break.
A troubled young woman. Her evil parents.
We never had any issues between us.
Has justice been done?
I'm in a prison.
Join journalist Richard Gilliatt as he delves into one of Australia's most gripping cases. Shadow of Doubt, a new podcast investigation from The Australian.
I cannot find one of these allegations that's possible.
Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
For almost 37 years since they died, the families of 16-year-old Mona Lisa Smith and her cousin, 15-year-old Jacinta Rose Smith, have been fighting for justice for their girls. In handing down her findings on Tuesday, State Coroner Teresa O'Sullivan acknowledged the inquest into the girls' deaths couldn't have happened without them.
This inquest, held because of the unrelenting advocacy of Mona and Cindy's families, was their final hope to obtain answers about the circumstances of the deaths of their beloved girls. It was some form of justice, albeit decades too late.
Rosemary Neal has spent a good chunk of her career in journalism investigating stories like this one, those that happen at the often uncomfortable intersection of race and justice. She's become well acquainted with Mona and Cindy's families over the course of their decades-long fight for justice. Dawn is Cindy's mum and June is Mona's.
The biggest heroes of this story are the families, the grieving mothers. Dawn, the mother of 15-year-old Cindy, is still working for a legal service in Bourke, has lost three of her children, including Cindy, but is still fighting for justice. June has been a domestic violence worker. And then there's a sister, Fiona, who is family spokesperson. She is Mona's sister, and she too is incredibly courageous and stoic in the face of what must be overwhelming grief, but also just a sense that no one was really listening to them, from state authorities through to the broader media.
In a statement released on Tuesday afternoon, Mona and Cindy's loved ones said they felt vindicated by the coroner's assertion that the concerns raised by the family with respect to investigative failures and systemic racism were entirely justified and correct. The family said they hope the state's Attorney General will consider a proposed reform to the Crimes Act that would mean perpetrators can be prosecuted, even when the exact time of a victim's death isn't known. Dawn Smith said Cindy's loved ones want to be able to hold someone accountable for the wrongdoing exposed by the inquiry. She said, quote, "The findings were good, but the pain and the hurt are still with us and always will be." June, Mona's mum, reiterated the betrayal she still feels following her interactions with the New South Wales police in the months and years following her daughter's death. She said, quote, "We all bleed the same. We're proud to be black. For cops to treat us different because of racism is wrong." Mona's sister Fiona said, quote, "It brings me great peace to finally have recognition that the police didn't do their job and that my sister Mona wasn't driving that car." Rosemary Neal is a senior writer with The Australian. Cybersecurity experts say the government should beef up its online security legislation and increase penalties for tech platforms that refuse to remove harmful or violent content. You can read about the government's ongoing stoush with X, as well as all the nation's best journalism, right now at theaustralian.com.au.
My name is Manny Carutis, and I'm a former New South Wales policeman turned investigative reporter with a passion for missing persons cases. I'm here to quickly tell you about our True Crime Australia podcast, The Missing. In this series, I look at old missing persons cases, which have all gone cold, in an attempt to try and uncover new information, which could help see these missing people reunited with their loved ones, or any form of clue that could bring these families closure. The Missing is available now wherever you get your podcasts, and early and ad-free on Crimex Plus on Apple Podcasts.